federal agents that are listening in, trying to dig up dirt on me. It's the Finny Eastwood Show, here for your listening pleasure and your evidentiary, shall we say, sample case of all the different eclectic conspiracy that goes on all over the world. I've been listening to a few other shows recently, and man, we do really have quite the international flavour here on this show compared to a lot of others. It's quite interesting. I don't know. I think it's because I'm not really able to travel, so I try to talk to people in different countries as some kind of way of making up for it. Today we have somebody from Shetland. Anybody can guess where that is. His name is Stuart Hill. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, Stuart.
I'm from England, but I arrived in Shetland in 2001. Soon after I arrived here, the old Norse law was brought to my attention, and I started to look into that and find that over the centuries that Shetland had been really badly mistreated by both Scotland and England, and later the UK. So I started to look into the history and find out just how that situation had developed. And it turns out that the people of Shetland had gone from being completely sovereign in their own right, electing their own king, owning their own land outright, making their own laws — you can't get any more sovereign than that — to being more or less slaves and serfs during the 17th and 18th century, and not having any sense of that original sovereignty now left.
I think we can all relate to that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty general throughout the world. But the interesting thing about Shetland is that I've been looking at the legal situation and challenging the position of the UK and Scotland in Shetland, and asking the very simple question: when did Shetland become part of Scotland? It's simple enough, and they should be able to give me an answer showing a date and a document, whatever. But I don't get any kind of reasonable answers from the authorities. A well-wisher was kind enough to give me an island. It's 2.5 acres, just over a hectare, to make a serious challenge to the authorities. So,
do you by chance have 10-foot electric fences and dinosaurs roaming around?
No, nothing like that. I first of all build a house on it without any planning permission. The local authority decided they wanted council tax, and then suddenly withdrew when they realized that in order to claim that, they'd have to take me to court. And in taking me to court, they'd have to explain how Shetland became part of Scotland. So they withdrew from that. I stopped paying my income tax and VAT on my company, and the tax authorities came down on me and threatened to take me to court until they also realized the same thing. They withdrew. I put a Land Rover on the road in Shetland itself, not on the island, without any documentation, with my own number plates on it, on my own tax disc. And the police came, took it away, destroyed it, and didn't bring any charges. So I'm starting to think, well, there's something a bit strange going on here. Nobody seems to want to actually take me to court, because when they do, they're going to have to show when Shetland became part of Scotland. And I'm thinking I'm getting nowhere with this, because how can I actually – I can't take any of the authorities to court here because I don't recognize the court. So I have to provoke them sufficiently in order that they will take me to court. So I let things lie for a bit, and then last year, no, 2010, I put what I call the consular vehicle on the road. It said consular vehicle, Forwick State consular vehicle, notices in the window saying it wasn't subject to UK statutes and so on, and two big signs in the front window saying, look, no UK tax disc, and look, no UK license. Well, I drove around in this for about 6 weeks before the police stopped me for only having one brake light. They took the vehicle, seized it, and within 2 weeks, they're allowed to, under the law, they're allowed to destroy it. So the 2 weeks elapsed, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be in the same position here as I was with the Land Rover. They're going to take it and destroy it, my own personal property, and they're not going to bring any charges. I'm just going to be in the same position. So I put another one on the road, consular vehicle number two, with the same notices, and I was reported by a member of the public for driving this on the road, so the police had to come and stop me. So they stopped me, and I locked myself in the vehicle this time. And they had to actually break in and pull me out, and then they had to arrest me. So at that point, things start to move. They have to arrest me, they have to take me to court and charge me with these various charges. So at last, I've got what I wanted, which was one of these authorities to take me to court. So I've got 71 pages of argument supported by 120-odd documents, which show that Shetland not only didn't become part of Scotland, but never could have become part of Scotland. I don't know if you... I'll give you a kind of potted history, because the whole thing is very interesting. I think that Shetland really holds the key to a lot of the problems that are going on in the world.
There's a lot of sovereignty movements starting to crop up everywhere.
Yeah. But Shetland is different because of the way that Shetland's history has developed. And I'll just do it very quickly. In 1469, Shetland belonged to Norway. Norway belonged to Denmark at the time, but that's beside the point. 1469, the King of Denmark wanted his daughter to marry the King of Scotland, James III. So he put up a dowry, or he arranged to provide a dowry of 60,000 florins. He couldn't come up with the money, so at the last minute he pawned Shetland for the amount of the dowry. So what King James got was, sorry, I'm going to go back again. What the King of Norway pawned was his own lands in Shetland. That's all he could pawn, because the rest of the lands were owned by other landowners. His lands amounted to about 10% of Shetland. So what King James got was 10% of Shetland held in trust until the Danes came up with the money to take it back again. And that's all the Crown has ever had. But they proceeded to assume ownership over the whole of Shetland and farm it out to various nobles and courtiers and so on. They would farm it out and then take it back, farm it out again, take it back. This happened on about 14 occasions until we get up to 1667, almost 200 years later, the Treaty of Breda, which has got nothing to do with Shetland except that it was a treaty between England and Holland to redistribute the conquest lands around the world. At this point, for instance, New Amsterdam became New York. So it changed hands from the Netherlands to England. But in that treaty, the Danish contingent managed to put in a codicil at the end of the treaty saying that the original pawning document still stood in its full force, which meant that the the clock was turned back to 1469, the Crown had to admit that it only owned or only had 10% of Shetland held in trust. And there was then an Act of Parliament which recognised all of this, and it meant that there was absolutely no way that Shetland could have been incorporated into the Act of Union of 1707, 38 years later. Sorry if this is getting a bit complicated.
At least not legally.
So
there's no way they could own. There's no way they could own it. Okay, legally speaking.
Yeah.
What did they do with it? Did they make off like most criminals and just pretend to own it, and everybody started eventually believing it because it was repeated to them over and over?
That's exactly what happened. Yes.
No.
Now, what everybody has neglected to look at is the position of the other 90% in 1469. They owned their own land outright. They elected their king, and they made their own laws. They were sovereign in the most complete sense. They were a relatively small number at that point. They were called the Lords of Norway. But their land has now been passed down and split up and parceled out, so that every single landowner now in Shetland has inherited those rights of complete sovereignty. It's never been taken away from them. So it's now not a question of who owns Shetland between the King of Norway and the King of Scotland. It's who owns Shetland between all those other people and the actual owners of the 90%. So I've actually got three court cases going at the moment. There was the traffic case, which I've just described. I've had a case with the Royal Bank of Scotland. They've had me in the Court of Session here in Edinburgh since the middle of 2010, trying to stop me winding their company up. They've not succeeded, and the court has always dodged the question of jurisdiction. I bring it up time and again, and they always find a way of dodging it. I'm getting better at the court stuff, and next time I think I'll nail them. But the judge is actively avoiding the issue of facing up to having to explain how Shetland became part of Scotland and how how Scotland or the UK has any authority here. And this whole question is absolutely huge, because if Shetland is not part of Scotland or the UK, it's not part of the European Union either. And whatever entity it was that joined the European Union wasn't the whole of the UK. So it's a big can of worms. And it's quite a lot of fun opening it up.
It's like Russian dolls, you know. It's like Russian dolls. You know how they all kind of like stank on top of each other and inside one another.
You're breaking up, Vinny.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. I was just saying that it's very similar to Russian dolls, how they've got a whole bunch of dolls that fit inside each other.
Oh, Russian dolls, yes. Right, yeah.
It's a shell game, basically. You know, you have one legal precedent hidden within history, hidden within a legal system, hidden within a legal doctrine, hidden within the truth. You know, it's very hard to unravel it all. Stuart, can you hear me?
You're breaking up so much that I'm having difficulty understanding what you're saying. I'm trying to lip read as well at the same time.
Okay, that's not good. Well, do you have a phone number there or something of that nature where we can reach you, or perhaps we can just reconnect after the break? We only have about 3 minutes left in this segment anyway, so we can probably sort out those technical issues on the other side. I wanted to comment also the parallels that this kind of struggle has around the world. You have United States citizens now with the 10th Amendment recognizing state sovereignty and throwing out the federal government, or at least wanting to. And also in New Zealand, you have what are known as Māori hapū, or tribal councils, who are throwing off the New Zealand government and saying, we want our sovereignty, we want to make our own laws, we want to make have our own rights, you know, that kind of thing that you can't take away. And likewise, this is happening probably all over the world, I'd wager, that there probably isn't a single country where this isn't going on to a lesser or greater degree. And I think that's actually really encouraging, that almost the entire world as one is recognizing that our states are frauds and we need to take them back because they're ours by right. And you can't steal something that was already stolen. You can only take it back and reclaim it. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My special guest is Stuart Hill, coming as live from Shetland. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. You can join us in the chat room there. Back in a minute. United we stand and divided we fall. Unity, please don't desert me. Operatic 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, the colonial scumbaggery island jewel. You just gotta love that country, New Zealand. Clean and green. Oh yeah, that's about right. As in, the Greenies will clean out your bank accounts with carbon taxes, which we've already passed here in this country. My very special guest is Stuart Hill from Shetland. Welcome back. Now, what were we getting off to? Oh, yeah, I was talking about the sort of global sovereignty movement, and it's not just about, say, regional sovereignty. Like, for example, this particular region has a historical precedent for being seen as sovereign, making its own laws, etc. It's becoming more advanced than that. It's becoming almost individual, as in the human sovereign, rather than the communal sovereign, is starting to force its way into existence. Have you seen this happening all over the place, or what?
Yeah, I think that's really the crux of the matter. You know, we've been taught to understand sovereignty as that power which is owned by the crown or the monarch, but in actual fact, everybody's sovereignty, their own personal sovereignty, is the key thing.
Now, we have somebody who lives just down the road from you contacting me on Facebook, Mr. Nicholson.
All right.
And he says, Mr. Hill's cause in Shetland is largely mocked and not taken remotely seriously. People are not interested in listening, and even if they were, they don't want to rock the boat.
I could agree they don't want to rock the boat, Mr. Nicholson seems to be claiming to speak for the whole of Shetland. That's not my experience. Shetland is a really fine place. It's a very tight community. A tight community has its drawbacks. People look after each other, and I was really struck when I first arrived here that if somebody's ill in the community, everybody knows about it. If somebody dies, the whole community is palpably affected. But the other side of that is that everybody has a place in the community. Everybody knows their place in the community, and everybody has some toes they can't tread on. Now, I'm an outsider. You can tell by my accent. I'm an Englishman, and people might say, well, what am I doing poking in something that doesn't concern me? But my value is in the fact that I don't know whose toes I'm treading on, and I really don't care. If I think what I'm doing is right, then I'll go ahead and do it. The work I'm doing in the courts at the moment has I've not sought any publicity for that, apart from just letting people know. But what's important about all of that is that the authorities themselves are going to such lengths not to confront the situation. I'm not trying to tell Shetland people what to do, what kind of outcome they should seek. All I'm saying is that they should have the choice to do whatever they like with Shetland. They're being now offered the choice to go either with Scotland or the UK in the case of Scottish independence. But they're not being told that they have the choice to do whatever they like. Now, it may be that they want to stick with the situation as it is. That's fine. But they need to know they've got the choice. And that's really what I see my job as.
You know what? I think that's a very common thread, isn't it? With politicians, for example, they give you these two choices, which are really not choices at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And because you're unaware that you have a real choice of, say, voting no confidence or whatever, you often make the wrong choice because you don't know that there is a real choice available.
Yeah.
But how do you learn? How do you make people know about that without the publicity? I mean, you've said that you're not seeking publicity. I'd like to know why not.
Shetland, what I'm doing on Forvik, Forvik is a bit of Shetland. And what I'm saying really is that Forvik is Shetland in a microcosm. So whatever can be done on Shetland, on Forvik could be done on Shetland if people wanted to do it. I think that it's difficult to talk here in terms of oppression when people don't even realise they're being oppressed, and they don't even realise how many freedoms have been lost by governments making them afraid and actually making them demand for their freedoms to be taken away.
So, it'd be nice to have a list one of these days of all the freedoms that we once had that we can't enjoy anymore.
Yeah. but I often think back a few years ago, there were tanks at Heathrow Airport, and there was all this fuss going on for two or three days, some kind of scare going on, and then it all just went away, and nothing was ever heard about it again. What was that all about? You know, it's just...
There was some fake bomber foiled plot with guys with plastic bottles with liquid in them that they were going to use as explosives and blow up multiple airliners, and that was about the size of that one. It's like, well, you know, they probably created those terrorists in the first place. What were they, like MI5 rookies?
So I don't believe that you should try and break something if you haven't got something to put in its place. So what I'm very keen to do with Forvik is to explore ways that a new kind of society can be set up with rules by which the members of that society want to live. And hopefully that would provide a model for other societies in other parts of the world. The difference here in Shetland is that there is the legal possibility of making that happen because of Shetland's history that I just described to you. So if the UK or Scotland actually have no authority here, we're actually living in anarchy, whether we know it or not. And that anarchy has been caused by the Crown not having properly incorporated Shetland into their realm.
I was told that the meaning of anarchy is derived from the Latin, I think, kind of like, you know, oligarchy and that kind of thing. The archy part is sort of like meaning leader. So oligarchy would mean the rich people are the leaders, or, you know, that kind of thing. Anarchy means no leader, essentially. Everybody's their own owner, their own boss, essentially, and nobody's got power over anybody else.
Well, that's how I would see the situation at the moment. There is no authority here. The authority that exists is only kept in place because people don't question it.
Now, it does make one wonder, you know, how do you live in a society with no authority? And I tell them, well, you kind of already do. Yeah. Have a look around. In your daily life, how many times do you use a police officer? How many times do you use a politician? How many, you know, these people who are in positions of authority, they're basically never of any use to you. So not much changes.
That's right. And the other problem is that we've been brought up to be so dependent on everybody, governments, corporations and so on, they all want us to be dependent because it's good for them. And that takes away any sense of expressing your own responsibility for yourself. You always have to find somebody to blame or somebody to account for what's happening to you. You're never faced with the responsibility of looking after yourself. And that is so draining for any kind of society.
And what's interesting is when the government makes you dependent, or the corporate structure, or whatever the circumstances are that make you very dependent and incapable of supporting yourself, you recognize just how hard it becomes going from that situation into supporting yourself, because not only do you have to learn new things, but you also have to build new things. And that creativity, that independence was never nurtured. So you basically, it's kind of like trying to grow a leg out of your forehead. It's just really, really hard. Not saying it's impossible.
You're pushing things a bit far there, but I think the human body has such remarkable capability that we are never made aware of. I've got a bit of personal experience on that. I did some firewalks in America about the 1996 or so, and a 40-foot firewalk, when you can walk on those hot coals and tell the cells on the soles of your feet that they're not getting burnt, how do you do that? And that made me think and ask the question, well, if I can do that, then what else am I holding myself back from doing? Kind of took a long while to sink in, but I think we're capable of far more than we're ever led to believe.
Well, you're attempting to free a nation state almost single-handedly.
Well, the thing is that once I'm successful in any of these endeavours, and if the people of Shetland decide to take advantage of that, then my job is done. I'm redundant. I have no more importance, because it will then be the decision of the people to take whatever action they want to take. it doesn't stop me living the life that I want to lead, whatever decision the rest of Shetland takes. But then the history becomes redundant, I become redundant, and maybe I can then finally retire.
So you've got the job that a politician should have, essentially. I think that a politician should follow the MMR principle, make myself redundant.
Yeah.
If they can figure out a way to eliminate their job, it is their job to eliminate their job.
That's right,
essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, politicians operate the direct opposite way. If there's a way to make my job harder and make it take longer and make it cost more money, and if my job can grow in size and stature through crisis, then it's my job to make that crisis happen.
Absolutely.
For the good of my job.
Yeah.
And you know, they basically just create employment for themselves. And in this situation in Shetland, what I find interesting is the 90% to 10% ratio. You know, 90% of people, independent, technically, able yeah. to have their own land and make their own rules, that kind of thing. And then you have the 10%, say, government stake. Now, what do you think a slave-master relationship is supposed to look like? Is it supposed to be 90% of the power in the hands of the slave, 10%? Power in the hands of the master? No, I think that sounds about pretty wrong. It's usually 90% of the power in the control of the state, and the rest of it divvied out, very small nuggets of it amongst the people, not entirely dissimilar from finance.
Yeah.
So what happens here is you've got a group of people who don't recognize that they are the 90%. It's kind of like Occupy Shetland, you know, we are the 90%.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that happen because it'd be interesting, because it's so hard to unite people, especially when what you're talking about is even just a modicum of complication on any topic that you're coming on to. It'll instantly take out a large proportion of the people that would be capable of making a change because they're just too stupid. You know, let's not mince words here. People these days have been dumbed down on purpose and they are just too stupid to get it.
I have to agree. Going back to putting something else in its place.
We'll have to actually leave it there. We're coming up to a break.
All right.
Coming back to we'll make sure we come back exactly to that point.
Yeah.
You can't destroy something until you've got something to put in its place. Kind of like a leaky roof, you know. Somebody will sit around going, no, it's only a few leaks or whatever. But, of course, you're not going to go up and destroy that roof until you've got another one ready to chuck over the top. Otherwise, you get drenched. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome
you
to
made
the Crusader.
It. Welcome to the Crusader. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Get up here now.
Broadcasting.
What you
live from the future.
Huh?
That's right. It's already tomorrow. Give me some breaking news, mother effer. And also welcome back to my very special guest from Shetland, Stuart Hill, talking about Shetland sovereignty. Now, the thing that I was kind of wanting to ask you about this, we were touching on it over the break, about how if you're going to take down the existing system, you have to have something to replace it with. Otherwise, well, you're screwed, you know? What exactly needs to be removed and what exactly needs to be there in order to replace it? That's what I'm interested in.
Okay. I don't think this is ever going to be a matter of any kind of violence. I think what has to be done is to provide the means by which people can simply turn their backs on the existing system if they don't like it. Now, that's very difficult for people to do if there's nothing to turn to when they turn their backs on the existing system. So what I'm trying to set up with Forvic is the means by which we can set up a society and generate rules by which the members of that society want to live. And that will ensure a fair democracy, fair money, fair laws, and whatever people want to live by. And the whole of that depends on every single member having an input into the way things are run on a continuous basis, not just by electing members of to represent you every 4 or 5 years, or you send them away and they do what they like in the meantime, but every single person, every single member of that society having the ability to have an input on a continuous basis. Now, some questions will be a matter of polling on a one-off basis, as we normally do. You have a poll, and that question will be decided. Other questions will be decided on a continuous riding vote, so that you might want to change the level of cost of membership, for instance, taking a very simple example. And that will go up and down according to the weight of that riding vote. Now, because the existing members of Shetland, of Forvic rather, are from all over the world, it means that we can get an input from some pretty bright people into the building of that structure. And hopefully that will provide a model that can be then used elsewhere in the world. And one thought we've had just very recently was that every single member can be made a diplomat and declare their part of the world a part of Forvic, so that they can withdraw from their existing society, or if they want to have dual nationality, then that's perfectly fine as far as Forvic is concerned. But they would then, their part of the world, their house, their piece of land, will be a Forvic embassy and separate from the physical country that they're in at the moment. And of course, that gives them the advantages of diplomatic immunity and all that kind of stuff.
It'd be nice to have diplomatic immunity.
Sorry?
It'd be nice to have diplomatic immunity, like they're now giving to these UN butchers who are running around all over the show killing people for no reason.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's somehow there has to be found a means of balancing that those freedoms and taking the responsibility at the same time.
Well, here's the interesting thing. You know how they say that with great power comes great responsibility? Yeah. I think it's actually the other way around. With great responsibility comes great power. More specifically, with taking responsibility comes great power.
Yeah.
It's
and that
it's
has
your
to be at a personal level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you stop making excuses, if you stop sitting around doing nothing, just talking about stuff, and you actually really start doing some things, then you recognize just how powerful you are.
Exactly.
And there's an old saying, the people who try to reach too far are the only people who actually really find out how far they can reach.
Yeah. If you're not failing, you're not trying.
And who wants to live around a world full of people who don't try? I don't think it's working quite so well at this point.
No, I have to agree.
We're all going along to get along. We're accepting what's coming at us. We don't really care. Just as long as I can get home at the end of the day, crack open a beer and watch 4 hours of television, I am happy.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's life. That's real life.
You've touched on an interesting thing there about happiness. People expect that other people and other events outside themselves can make them happy. it's a total nonsense. You've got so many relationships where both partners are looking at the other to provide them with happiness. We can only ever be responsible for our own happiness. That is our prime responsibility. And once you accept that, then you become free of those dependencies of expecting somebody else to do it for you.
I think that that's kind of what has really happened to us, isn't it? We've become the children. We've become adult children.
Yeah.
It kind of sickens me in a way because, you know, we go through a hell of a lot of crap growing up, going through school. School's like torture. And you have to then figure out that all that schooling ain't worth nothing and you're virtually never going to use any of that knowledge ever again. You know, the bulk of it, you know, apart from being able to read and write and perhaps a little bit of creativity here and there, it starts you off and sometimes.
But all that schooling is to make you into an economic unit. It's not to find ways of expressing your ultimate creativity, your ultimate potential. You have
in
to
fact,
be able to fit into the existing system and to get qualifications. And what is a qualification? When you qualify a sentence, you limit its meaning. So a qualification is a limitation of that person.
Well, it really is, especially because they'll have to hang around with about $40,000 worth of debt for a 3-year degree that won't get them a job.
Yeah.
With knowledge that they're never going to use. You know, and it just comes down to the point. If that person had, instead of going to university and getting hugely amounts of debt to learn knowledge they can't use and won't be employed for, actually went out and started a business that they wanted, you know, just out of the back of a truck. That's how the guy from Nike did it, you know. He had something like a waffle iron in the back of a truck or something like that, and that's how he made his first shoes. Okay? You don't need a hell of a lot of startup capital. You don't need a hell of a lot of preparation. What you do need is determination and a vision and wanting to make that vision happen. Not wanting to just see it in your head, but in order to see it, to hold it in your hands. That's what you need.
Yeah.
If you have that, it doesn't matter what your other restrictions are. They become meaningless because you recognize that you're powerful enough to overcome any shortage of supply, any problem that should arise, and you're creative enough to come up with solutions to those problems when they come to you.
And
that's
it's
the
not
only
very
time.
Long before you realize that you don't have to be very much better than the mundane standard that's all around us to become very good indeed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's because we've all got low standards, and now we're all happy.
Yeah. But this is such an exciting time. There's a kind of spontaneity that's going on throughout the world at the moment. And this is the second time in my life that I've experienced it. The first time was way back in 1977, 1980s, when I taught myself blacksmithing. And about a year after I started, there was a blacksmithing conference of blacksmiths in the UK, and those people all came together, and the exchange of ideas, each of those people was making some kind of creative input into a craft that is so ancient you would have thought that everything had been done already, but here we were, each one of us in our own different way, making that our own creative input. And when we got together, it was so exciting to exchange ideas without any kind of holding back and the thought that, this is mine, I'm going to hang on to it, I'm not going to show anybody else. But it was completely the opposite. Everybody wanted to show what they were doing. And that was
a spontaneous
thing that happened at that time. Now this is a spontaneous movement happening throughout the world where people are waking up to the fact that we have been oppressed. We've been held down, and you know, we're all about to blossom.
I was oppressed this whole time, and I now can see because I once was blind. Yep, sounds about right. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That was Stuart Hill, ladies and gentlemen. Go and Google him. We'll be right back after the break for hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Back in a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the fabulously fluoridated frequency from American Freedom Radio. Oh yeah. Oh, now that was a good guest there, the old Stuart Hill from Shetland, and just kind of thinking about it, we're all really on the exact same boat, pretty much at all times. Aren't we? Every single time you look at anywhere on Earth, you hear the same thing as what's going on right here at home. It's inescapable. Anybody who denies that there's some kind of... Anybody who denies in any way, shape or form that there's some kind of conspiracy going on is so naive. And I desperately hope that their naivety doesn't get shattered in an experience, you know, such as has happened to me in my life or many others. It's usually better to shatter naivety with a little bit of information rather than a heavy dose of reality, because that heavy dose of reality can kind of destroy your entire freaking life. And it does. By George, it does. There are some scary people. Scary people, okay? Most of us don't encounter these kind of people in our daily life kind of thing. But brutal, sociopathic, absolute, purely distilled scumbaggery, like the purest strain, you know, of scumbaggery that has ever been discovered is surely being propagated as we speak, in every single way, every single day. Okay? And you look at the evidence, it confirms it. NDAA. What does that mean? Well, it means they can take you at any point, disappear you, not tell your family. By all rights, they can summarily execution you. This is the military and the police being able to do this to US citizens. And now guess who's doing it too? China. That's right. China, uber human rights abusers, the most awful, tyrannical regime virtually ever, you know. Hey, in fact, do we have somebody on the line there? Stuart Hill, perhaps? No? I don't think so. But China has now used the US NDAA as a justification for making their laws even more strict so that the average cop can do this to you, disappear you, kill you on the side of the street. Think about this, man. This is remarkable. Think about the instances. How many times have you ever seen a cop just gun somebody down in front of you with no provocation legally? Never in a million years you'd think you'd see that laws like that passed where they could just do things like that. Cops like that, you know, trigger happy, roid raged ex-veteran type crazies who've had one tour too many, getting recruited into the police now in large numbers. Check it out. Evidence is there. They're building a giant... It's like, you ever seen the Bond movies where they have the incredibly talented, evil henchmen? Or the other movies where they have groups of, like, Dirty Dozens, for example, of brutal psychos, killers, etc., all coming together to do a mission or what have you. That's kind of what they're turning the police forces into, you know, slowly but surely. There's still the vast majority of good cops. They're there to protect the community and what have you. They don't know what's going to happen to them as soon as all these freedoms start getting taken away from everybody else. Okay? How you treat the worst of you is a reflection on how the best of you are thinking. And prison, you know, it's a pretty ruthless place to be, I'd imagine. Certainly a deserving place for somebody who has taken another human being's life or something similar to that. Of course, I consider that crime and punishment shouldn't be discernible by the choice of your president, per se. You know, like, that's why we have Supreme Courts and what have you, so that one Prime Minister or one El Presidente can't just wiggle his magic finger and disappear you into the back of a police car and summarily get execution and then your organs taken out and sold on the black market for money. You know, I'm just a crazy person, you know, because I just don't want to get murdered in my sleep. I don't want to be at a protest and then just suddenly get kidnapped, hustled into a car, and then take it away, and then before I know it, I've got a kidney out. You know, goodness knows what they can do. In China, they are doing this literally. They'll arrest you for shoplifting or something, and then execute you in one of their fashionable mobile police execution vans, and they take out your organs while they're still warm and sell them on the open market. Look at this stuff, man. This is what's coming. Okay, and I'm sick of people telling me, oh, Vinny, you know, that's just crazy. You know, it won't come here. I mean, maybe it's happening over there, but, you know, we're safe here in New Zealand. Bro, come on. All right? An attack on one is an attack on all. We need to be very, very wary of this fact. Anything that goes on anywhere is automatically of relevance to everyone now, because we're dealing with a singular plan, and it has its hallmarks. Hey, look, They're setting up a country, and they're making up like it's some kind of danger so we can invade it. And even if they are actually a real danger, they're only a danger because we sold the guns to them. Okay? Have we seen this story before? I think we bloomin' well have. It's the same story over and over again. And it doesn't matter which country's doing it either. Russians have played this game. Germans have played this game. Americans have played this game. The British, for all I know, created this game. Goodness knows the Romans probably did too. All right, it's the same story all the way through history. Somebody makes some stuff up because they want what you got. And then they take what you got because they can. Because you're too distracted. And if you're not distracted enough, then by golly, they'll make an effort to distract you even more so that they can continue to play their little game. It's kind of like a bad parent. Bad parent sitting there with some description of poker game going on. He's drinking, he's smoking, he's playing his poker game, whatever. You know, it's a free country. You can do what you want. Child comes in, just needs some attention, had a bad dream or whatever. Go watch this, or here's $20, you know, go play in the pokey machine or something like that. Just because, you know, my poker game's more important than parenting. It's the same with your government. If you wind up neglecting to pay attention, and I mean really paying attention, because in order to pay attention, it's going to cost you something. Okay, that's why they call it paying attention, because you have to miss out on other things in order to do so. If you're really paying attention to your government like you would for perhaps a child that you were raising, you know, that level of commitment, that level of responsibility, if that was actually there as part of your thought process, your country would have the care and assistance it needs in order so that it doesn't get set up, in order so that it doesn't get ganged up on, in order so that it doesn't go wildly out of control. This is the reason why people have neglected to take care of their governments. It's because the people who own the governments, the bankers, want you to. Once it goes into tyranny and enslavement and death stage and all that kind of thing, it's already too late. And it happens every time. These people just get way too powerful. They think that because they've got a lot of power and a lot of influence that they can get away with anything. They think they're gods. They think they're like Prometheus or Loki or something. And they want to rule. You know, it's because we're cool, so we rule. That's basically the mentality. But just imagine, as well as somebody being a complete and total jerkwad, at the same time, they're also very evil. Evil, as in they literally sacrifice and rape children. Babies, even. You know, newborns, preferable. This is, like, what? What? Yes. Yes. Don't forget about that. Just remember that these people are very, very dangerous. The most evil scumbags you could ever conceive of. The comic books, the movies, the horror flicks ain't got nothing on reality that these people do on a daily basis. Child kidnapping rings all over the place. All right. Nothing sacred anymore. Nothing sacred. These people don't want anything to be sacred. They hold the earth as sacred to the point where if you're actually living upon it, that you are a parasitical organism of absolutely no use, and we don't care. Look, you've been born. That's true, but you only survive via our good graces. You do anything we disagree with, you're gone. Brutal tyranny with absolutely no recourse of any kind. The New Zealand has just passed, just like the NDAA, virtually copy-paste, the Search and Surveillance Bill, saying that, oh, this 1,400-page or whatever legislation is going to clear up and simplify all the other old legislation. Are you kidding me? People are stupid. Okay, I've finally admitted it. Okay, I'm admitting it here on today. I don't want to say it to people because it's so depressing. But people are really, 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 really stupid. It's gotten to epic proportions now. It's unbelievable. They'll sit back and watch while everything it gets taken away from them. And be happy! And try and convince other people that they're stupid for being unhappy with it! This is stupidity borderlining on insanity! Have we lost the fundamental nerve in the entire human race's capacity for thought processes anymore? Looking slightly deeper into things seems to be, like, scary for some people. Like looking into a dark cave with some scary mythical creature inside of it that's gonna gobble you up. That's what information really is. It's a scary, scary beast. Oh, stay away from that. Everybody, goodness sake. And I'm not talking about the people who'd be listening to the show. Of course not. You know, you're all wonderful, enlightened, and fabulous people, which I felt has always been kind of like the majority of things, right? When you get an individual or whatever, and you're talking to them, they're a hell of a lot different than they are as a people, okay? Because when people are thinking in that herd mentality, they ain't thinking. The thoughts that are running through their heads are all the repeated propaganda and mystical mayhem of all the moronic monstrosities of scumbaggery. It's every single person's right to get some decent information, but the problem is they don't want you to have decent information, so they convince you that you don't even want it. They try to tell you that being informed is a stupid thing, to make fun of people who talk about things that they don't know in order to make themselves look better. This is a stupid thing to do. And you got to stop engaging in absolute and utter stupidity when you can. Once you realize, oh my God, I'm a moron. I'm hanging around with other morons. We're all morons together. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get some new friends. I'm going to start spending time in different places. I'm going to change my life so that I don't wind up wrecking it. Isn't that a smart move, you know, before your government kills you? I think so. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back after the break. You can call in now, ladies and gentlemen. Phone lines are now open. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. 8525. Back in a minute.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Back, I said, ladies and gentlemen, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now, I have a thought process. It's about how we kind of survive in general, you know, in a psychological way, because survival today for most people isn't sort of like a life and death situation every day. You know, you're not getting chased by tigers or lions or bears. Oh my. And survival's not actually that hard. Okay. You don't really have to live in a slave-like situation where you have 14 people to a room and you have to work 18 hours a day or something like that. You don't have to do that. Of course, and some people who literally are slaves and still exist today, but this is more for us, the people who allegedly are in the first world scenario. When we survive, we wind up learning a whole lot of things along the process of surviving. And we start to try and make sense and patterns and figures out of everything that we see. You know, and that is part of our continued growing survival. What is happening is that survival mechanism is being shut off. Okay, it's not telling you to recognize patterns and symbols and things of that nature anymore. It's instead encouraging you to think that everything happens by sheer coincidence, that there's a lot of chance, or maybe it's fate, something out of your control, essentially, something that's beyond your perception. And there's a lot of truth to that. However, despite the fact that there is truth in that, there's also a lot of lies in it, because there are a lot of things which are, you know, evidentiary. You can physically prove that concepts exist, that historical incidences have happened, etc. You can literally prove those, and they set precedents for your continued survival. For instance, if you were to have a look at the 20th century and figure out what killed most people in the 20th century, you know, what was the most likely cause of unnatural death? Oh my God, it was people's governments. How did they accomplish that? Well, first legislation they started passing was to tell kids to come to public school, outlawed homeschooling. Okay. What was the last thing they passed? Oh, gun ban legislation. So firstly, you've got the entire society indoctrinated in a way where they're dislinked from their general parental survival unit, and instead start to think that their survival is dependent on the state. Once they're convinced enough that the state is the only way to protect them and that they can't protect themselves, they then are complicit when the government asks them to turn in their weaponry, because they no longer see a need to protect themselves, because the government loves me, the government cares about me. Little do they know that every single time when strict gun ban or weapons ban legislation has been implemented, there have been massive genocide afterwards. Every time. You know, and it works on the small scale too. Even handgun bans, for example, murder rate fracking skyrockets. You know, criminals keep carrying guns because they didn't obey the law in the first place. That's why they're criminals. That's why they go up and assault people and stuff like that. They're going to carry a gun. Law-abiding citizens obey that ordinance, though, and they get assaulted or attacked by criminals that are armed, and they're not armed to protect themselves. Okay, and it's a similar, and again, small scale back up to the big scale again. You think about a big government with all the armies, all the guns, all the weaponry, all the intelligence services, all of the police, all of this, that, and the other, versus a completely unarmed citizenry that is incapable of survival without the good graces of the government. Okay? And again, go to a different scale. Let's talk about farm animals. You do take care of your farm animals, don't you? Because you live off them. Okay? So you keep them alive. They definitely aren't free. They're not free to roam across the countryside or whatever. And you claim that, you know, we treat them well, but their ownership, their property, their stock. And back up to the big scale again. That's how the elite think about us. So think about this. If you are, in fact, a farm animal, how best to procure your survival? Escape? Is it even possible? Revolt? You know? Or do you need some kind of outside assistance? How would you plan it? Do you have enough people? Can you do it? Or can I just get out of here by myself? You know, and that all depends upon whether or not your will to survive hasn't been stamped out yet. Because so many people out there, they'll do anything to survive, but they won't do a thing to save themselves from extinction. Isn't that interesting? They can see something coming, they'll hear someone tell them about it, but they won't do anything. Because they don't see the threat as real. For some reason, people think that shark attack, that zombies are things that they should be afraid of. I'm not kidding. People are actually afraid of shark attacks and zombies more than they are a real live human being breaking into their house and attacking them. We have an irrational fear base now. And it stems from our entire upbringing about different things telling us what to be afraid of, what to want. When you go to any kind of schooling institution, as I was talking with Stuart Hill earlier, they're basically just training you to be a cog for the state. Okay, that's very well true. And it's only if you believe in yourself and you don't really care about what the school thinks that you can actually do well in any of the topics that they cover for you. You know, if you take an active interest in it, for instance, if you do more than is required, if you do extra stuff on that particular subject, for some people it might be drama, for some geography, for some psychology, it doesn't matter, essentially. Because nobody's going to be an English teacher, a math teacher, a geography teacher, and a history teacher, and a music teacher, and an art teacher all at the same time, are they? Yet the student has to be an art student, a history student, a geography student, and they have to learn all this different stuff every day. I'm wondering where the benefit in that lies, you know? Is it just so that we can force you into, you know, these time codes? Beep. Okay, everybody, we have to move to the next learning establishment. We have exactly 4 minutes. Dun, 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 dun. It's keeping you to a clock every time, isn't it? You know, it doesn't care whether or not you're finished. You know, if it did, you could go at any time. You're not free. You're a prisoner in school. It's prisoner training camp. They have these big courtyards and fields and things like that, which are all surrounded by these huge fences. You know? It's unbelievable. Where's the necessity for those giant fences? I mean, as if the gates aren't open all the time? Why do they need those? Is it just to sit around and Some wealthy industrialist sick joke? Well, your schools are prisons. Your children cannot escape. They could escape if they wanted to. But because they're a herd animal and they're treated as such, they don't even feel the need to. Thinking, hey, we're surviving here. You know, I've got my small group of pseudo-intellectual chuckwad friends and we're having good fun. You know, we're popping Xanax in class. It's all G unit, bro. No worries. We become so destitute, is the word, in every way that matters. It's like a wasteland of human potential out there. So many, and it's sad to see. So many have been convinced that they don't matter. They've literally being convinced of it to the point where they will actively promote themselves as somebody who doesn't matter, as somebody who doesn't care, as if not caring is cool. Why? Why do you want a society like that? You and I, we don't want that kind of society. The only people who really do, the people who actually understand what that kind of society is, what it means,
are the people who are going to wind up benefiting from it. Who benefits from an incredibly stupid society? For the people who will keep working and not ask any questions. The people who own that society, that's who. The people who never get questioned, the people who are never on the mainstream media, they've got all their front men, all of that kind of stuff, all hidden away. Yet at the same time, in plain sight. But because nobody's curious, nobody is competent, nobody has the strength of will, of dedication, the creativity, or the questioning nature that it takes to find out about this. Not en masse. Individuals, maybe, yes. Individuals can do what masses cannot. Think. Masses can't think because there's no such thing as a mass. There's only a person. One person's thoughts amplified can be equal to an entire mass's thoughts voted on. Depending on the intelligence of that person, and depending on the intelligence of the crowd, depending upon the moral fortitude and ethics that that person does follow. It's a frightening notion to comprehend, and to comprehend fully, that in the next election cycle, you will have morons. Masses and masses of easily manipulated, dumbed down, aspartame drinking, fluoride thought process clouded morons deciding who will rule your future for the next few years. That is a terrifying reality. And I feel very sorry for the Americans, and I feel very sorry for all of us, really, because, hey, we've all become stupidified. And Americanized and New World Orderified, haven't we? That's what we live now. We live a slave existence just like that reality. And we have a caller on the line here, area code 814. What's your first name? State your business.
My name is Tim.
Hey, Tim. Where are you calling from? What state?
I'm calling from Pennsylvania.
Welcome to the show, man. What can we do for you?
Thanks. I was listening to your interview with Jordan Maxwell, and he had said, and I noticed that you had asked a couple guests after that show about what he had said about, like, what you do with the knowledge that you gather from basically the rabbit holes, and do you gather anything other than just the knowledge? And the first thing that came to my mind after hearing that question is, with that knowledge comes a change of perception. And with that change of perception, it really affects, at least in my experience, my reality and my experience of my reality in my daily life.
So it's kind of like it doesn't affect your life directly, but it has knock-on effects for everything that happens in your daily life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that I personally... The biggest issue that I run into when talking to other people about these kinds of topics, it seems like I get the same response from people, and it seems like they have an overwhelming fear of this information and of this knowledge. It's like they don't want to explore it because of that overwhelming fear. With me, there's never been that fear. With this knowledge, it's truth. There's nothing to fear from truth, and really, it's subjective to each individual and their reality, what they hold true.
Well, maybe they should be fearful. I mean, maybe it's like that classic scene in a horror movie where there's a chick in her underwear saying, "Oh my God, there's something in the basement. I should go down there in my underwear and check it out." And everybody's like, "What is your problem, honey? Get out of the house." Or, you know,
yeah.
maybe we are actually approaching a scenario on occasion like that. Don't you think?
And I think that is quite possible, but I always, in my mind, there's a purpose and a reason for each emotion, whether it be fear or anger. There's things that are worth that fear or worth that anger, and so many people have their emotions so misplaced. They're going into the wrong things.
I fully agree with you. Tim, if you want to hold on, we'll come back to you after the break if you like.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com or join the conversation by calling 218-339-8525. Back in a few minutes. Welcome back. Show. It's kind of like a campfire.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear
that it's all just a little bit of history repeat.
Precisely what it is. Every single time I see it happening again and again and again and again. Well, I don't see it. Because generations see it. You know, generations are long since gone and been wiped out and tried to fight and restore their liberty and what have you, and then just got killed off in the process because they didn't do it early enough or in great enough numbers or didn't think enough of the process through. Tim in Pennsylvania is my caller here. Anybody else would like to call in? The number is 218-339-8525. So, Tim, welcome back. Do you have anything else to say?
Yeah, I had a question for you. What do you think makes an individual unique? Like, if I were to ask you, what makes you unique?
Well, I think the answer's in the question. What makes me unique is I'm me, and nobody else is me.
Yeah, and that it would be very similar to my answer, and that would be my experience. Experience, really, when it comes down to it, is what makes so many unique. So many people, or so it seems, are living a false reality. Like, their experiences... So much similar to everybody else's experience. Me personally, when I was 17, I moved to England and lived in England for a year. I worked close to 100 hours a week at a dockyard in Cornwall. That gave me a whole lot of experience. After that, I moved back. I'm from Chicago. I moved back to Chicago, and my mom told me I had a month to get a job and move out of the house. At that point, I was not ready to be a slave to the man. So me and my girlfriend at the time, we decided that we were going to hitchhike. We were going to travel, hop trains, and hitchhike. And we went to New Orleans. And from that point, we traveled for 4 years, hopping trains, hitchhiking, traveling all across the United States. We saw 46 states in those 4 years. And that experience, I learned way more from that experience than I could ever learn reading something or learning something that's not via the experience.
It's like 4 years of an open college.
Yeah, exactly. And realistically, even more was learned in those 4 years. Then I didn't graduate high school. I never saw the point. It was like a prison to me when I was in high school. I rarely showed up, and then moving to England, I never graduated because 18's when you graduate, and then 17 to 18, and then my first year of high school, I went to a private school, and the tuition was insane. My mom, I got straight A's my first year of high school, and then my mom was unable to pay the tuition. It was something like $6,000-$7,000 for the 1 year of private schooling. So then my high school year got reset. So I was doing freshman year all over again, and that was enough for me to just say I'm not doing it at all.
Well, you know, you don't have to stub your toe many times before you recognize it's a stupid idea to do it and refuse to do it on purpose.
Yeah.
And isn't that how we kind of learn? We learn by pain, and it's like you need to experience some kind of angst or stupid situation before you actually recognize, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, and really, like now, with that experience, through the pain, so many people just get absorbed in that feeling of that pain or feeling of that angst rather than, could there be something to learn from this experience where I'm experiencing this pain? So many people, they end up reliving the similar or same experience and without asking themselves why, without asking themselves, is there something I should be taking from this other than the pain?
Yeah, you come into this wall, right, and you hit the wall, and everybody's done this in their life, I'm sure. Some people, they'll hit that wall, and then they won't get over it, okay? Like, that's what you do when you hit the wall. You're supposed to then get over it, kind of like in basic training or whatever, you know, when they're climbing up those walls, the cargo nets or what have you, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Some people don't get over it, on the other hand, and that wall's still in front of them. So the thing is, if you don't get over your experiences, you will keep repeating them until you do.
Yeah. And it's almost eerie how much that is true with reliving those experiences. I've had friends, I've had people, family really close to me. It's almost exact the experiences that they're reliving without digging any deeper than being wrapped up in the emotion.
Yeah, you know, and it is wrapped up in like a deep cocoon of emotion too, isn't it? You know, we've got this, it's like we're walking around with simmering in some kind of emotional jelly sack, and we're really afraid for that sack to get punctured and have everything pour out sort of thing, you know, like in an abattoir. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want that to happen, because when you recognize and you really have those really deep, emotional, strong realizations, it actually kind of hurts. It's like you're expelling ectoplasm or something like that. Just kind of accepting that, yes, I was abused, I was foolish, and I felt bad about that, and I felt guilty and whatever. Just recognizing how bad stuff is can be very painful.
Yeah, and I think that ties in as well into, like I said before, with talking about the rabbit holes, or talking about the depths of how far things go. People, they just let that fear hinder them from looking at these things logically, even though there may not be any logic to it. There's things that can be done. There's things that people can do to get out of these ruts. While I was traveling, I was in Portland, and one of the things that I did when I was in Portland was, I don't know if you've heard Adbusters, but they have campaigns and different things like that. And what we did when we were in Portland was we would put little sticky notes in, like, the glamour magazines or whatever. And this was me and the girlfriend that I was traveling with at the time. And we would write things like, you're already beautiful. You don't need these clothes or this makeup to know that you're beautiful. And so many people that get wrapped up into society's term of beauty, they end up killing themselves faster than they need to.
Mm. Well, it reminds me of a conversation I was having with a very dear friend of mine, and he was having some relationship issues, right? And I was just kind of straight up asked him, you know, he's about ready to dump her because he didn't like dealing with the fact that he had to be home at certain times and to do dishes and what have you at certain times and all this other things, you know, problems arise in every relationship.
Yeah.
And I said to him, look, mate, does she really, really, really love you? And he goes, well, yeah, she really, really does. And I go, well, that's that's what you want, okay? Basically,
mm-hmm.
if you're waiting around for some perfect girl to show up, she never will, okay? The best you can do, and a very decent second, if it's not the best, is to be with somebody else who really, really loves you and just loves you straightforward. You know, you don't need to put any other provisos or restrictions on looks or career prospects or any of these other arbitrary things. Do they really love you? Yeah. Yeah, they do. Okay. Sweet as. I can spend the rest of my life being loved. Tim, are you still there? Appears to have dropped off. Oh, well. Well, I think that's actually a decent point to leave it on. Don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? You know, be with people who really love you. I'm with somebody who really loves me, and I can tell you from experience, it's really awesome. You know, even when you're doing nothing, you're sitting there, you're still basking in it. Yeah, awesomeness. And you know, and what the elite really don't like, what they really don't want you to do, is number one, feel a real sense of love, and number two, they basically don't want you to recognize how powerful you are, right? And the two are not mutually exclusive. There's a lot of power in love. If you love what you do, you'll work longer hours and that kind of stuff, and you'll actually accomplish more. If you're not really into it, on the other hand, just like a relationship, when you're not really into the other person, it'll eventually run out of steam, fall short, and flat on its face, and you'll be left picking up the pieces. So just do what you love from the get-go, ladies and gentlemen, and quit messing around. After all, it's already 2012. There ain't no more time for messing around, is there? Regardless of whether or not you believe in paradigm shifts or controlled demolitions of the economy, 2012 is going to be a very big year, okay? And you best start surrounding yourself with people who know how to grow food, build stuff, know how to give a flying frank about you, know how to make herbal supplements, chutneys, and everything, man. Figure out how to get a social network full of people who actually care about you, love you, and have skills to survive, you know? And then you have a nice little community that you don't need to, like, be out in the middle hills of Wop Wops of Wisconsin or whatever the hell in order to get away from the government, because you're already away from them because you got each other. You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, and I'll see you again sometime, folks.